How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 4 of the Rain and Jays podcast. I'm John Corrales from RedsArmy.com. Joining me as always, the co-host, Jay King from Mass Live. Fresh off the first week of the Celtics season, an extended preseason game essentially, opening up against the 76ers. And then last night's debacle against the Toronto Raptors. Jay, really the first real team the Celtics have faced since starting this preseason and now the regular season.
Yeah, you know, it was the first good team they've played. They played two European teams, the Sixers, Nets, and Knicks for the rest of the preseason. And then finally against Toronto, it was like, this is what a playoff team looks like. And
Brad Stevens said it last night.
Yeah.
We're not as good as those guys right now. That's basically how he summed it up, and his quote, I think, is pretty evident and clear for everyone to see. So we'll see if we can improve, which to me is as negative as Brad Stevens is going to get about this team, because I don't think he was very happy about that second half effort last night.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely wasn't happy. And one thing he keeps harping on is the turnovers. And he said it in practice the day before meeting the Raptors, and then after copping it up 17 times against the Raptors, he said, if we can't take care of the ball, we're not going to be any good. And last year, you know, their offense was not very good. I believe they finished 19th in offensive efficiency, obviously below average. But the one thing that made them, like, not completely atrocious was that they hardly ever turned the ball over. And so they can't afford – they don't have the margin for error where they can do that. And especially against a team like the Raptors, which can fill it up and which defended well – at least against the Celtics, you can't do that. These Celtics aren't built for that. They need to be crisper, and it was ugly against Toronto.
Yeah, the problem with the turnovers, I'm okay with some turnovers where you're pushing the ball and you're trying to get a fast break opportunity, and sometimes that's going to happen. The ball's going to go off of somebody's hands or whatever. That's okay. Not ideal, but okay. But the turnovers, especially in the third quarter, lots of live ball turnovers at the top of the key leading to Toronto fast break opportunities. Just really lazy and not very crisp. And there was a lot of dribbling and then lazy passes. And when they got away from dribbling a lot and made crisp passes, the offense looked good. At times last night, the offense looked pretty good, but then they got into like dribble, dribble, dribble mode, and that really threw everything off. And I think the Celtics offense is going to be more about continuity, moving, and getting people open into open areas when the defense is overreacting. They're not going to be able to break anybody down off the dribble. There's nobody on this team that can break anybody down off the dribble. Not even Isaiah Thomas, who's pretty good at it. He still needs a little bit of help and a little bit of space. So they seem to get lazy in the second half, and I don't understand why.
Yeah, it felt like they started to believe the hype about themselves. You know, like think about last year, the whole second half of last season. They didn't have any stinker. It was like hardly ever did they have an effort where you were like, man, they just didn't bring it tonight. And against the Raptors, it kind of felt like that. And, I mean, they just – some of those turnovers are just – you couldn't explain that. It was like
– no.
Like just throwing the ball to the wrong team. And I do think they tried hard. Like they played hard, but they didn't play smart. And you have to do both, and they didn't do that. It was a stinker, and now the Spurs are coming on Sunday, so get ready again. because one of the best teams in the NBA is coming through. Good news is the Spurs just smacked the Brooklyn Nets. So the Nets continue to look awful, which is bodes well for Boston's lottery chances.
Yes, that's always a nice little shining light for the Celtics. Let's get into something here that I was harping on a little bit during the game. And I've got Twitter questions here or comments from Justin Hunter and Alex. Justin says, despite our loss and Turner's 25 bewildering third and fourth quarter minutes, do you guys rate us higher than Toronto overall? Combine that with Alex, who says, what does Brad Stevens see in Evan Turner? So let's get into Evan Turner. And as Justin mentioned, Evan Turner, okay, there were a lot of bad things last night. And Evan Turner didn't make any of them better. And the thing that gets me about how Stevens used Turner last night is Turner checked in halfway through the third quarter and played the rest of the game. And I can't understand how anybody on this team with its supposed depth would play an entire quarter and a half without a second of rest. Why would anybody play an entire fourth quarter? That to me boggles my mind. And I'm trying to figure out justifications. If maybe Turner's size was the only chance we had against DeRozan or something. Because Toronto's got some pretty big guards. And the Celtics don't. So, but I can't fathom the justification for playing Evan Turner that much during that stretch of time.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he was bad. He missed his first six shots. Like, when I talk about throwing the ball to the wrong team, he was one of those guys doing it the most. He had that floater at the end of the third quarter where you were like, oh, Evan, just pass the ball to someone else. That is not a good shot. Still had time to hit.
I think Jarebko in the corner.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that is, to me, that is the epitome of what happened last night with Evan Turner. You had the thing that NBA teams want the most, a great shooter in the corner all by himself. They go through, military-style planning to figure out a way to get good shooters into the corner, and he had them, and he looked at them, and he decided to throw up a floater with two guys in front of him. That, I can't contain my rage when it comes to that. That was a horrible decision, and he made an entire second half full of horrible decisions, yet Stevens stuck with him, and this is the first time since Stevens has been here that I'm completely perplexed by his decision to play this guy.
I would suspect because the Celtics went small when they were trying to come back, and then his size makes sense. Like, as you said, they have big guards. They have Ross. They have DeRozan. They have Carroll, all big physical guys. And so you need that. And they also needed some playmaking. Obviously, he didn't bring it against the Raptors. Like, he missed a dunk. It was just not Evan Turner's night from start to finish. I'm still interested to see how he fits in with that second unit alongside Isaiah Thomas. I don't know if that's the best way to use Evan Turner. I almost wonder already whether he should go back with the starters and move Jay Crowder to the bench. I don't know. Do you do that? Do you continue to go with the starters who have looked bad in the first two games? That's another issue altogether. But, yeah, I wouldn't have played Turner as much as he played against the Raptors. But, I mean, it had to be for the wing size and the versatility and the fact that they needed more playmaking, I guess, against a Raptors defense that looked pretty good on the perimeter. Like, they looked aggressive and physical, not at all like the Raptors of last year. And I think Damari Carroll deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, no, he's been a pretty good pickup for them. And, you know, they ended up getting pretty hot there in the fourth quarter. Terrence Ross.
Wow.
Come on. I mean, come on. But back to Evan Turner. Look, he was okay against Philly. I don't want to – and he during the Celtics' big stretch last year, he was okay. And he's an easy target. He's a very easy target because he can do some mind-boggling things out there, and he'll have stretches where he's terrible. So we as Celtics fans have to accept that that's going to be part of the deal and that he's going to have some good games. There's no doubt about that. But let's incorporate Jay Crowder into this, because Crowder, I think, for a good portion of the game last night, even though his numbers didn't look great, I thought he was the most important guy on the floor. In the first half, he was the most important guy on the floor, and he didn't even score. But he was in every play, and defensively, he was exactly what you wanted from Jay Crowder in that situation, where he's the tenacious defender, and he made things happen. Look, in the first quarter, I mean the first half last night, the Celtics and Raptors were tied. Crowder had 0 points, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a block. Those were his first half numbers. And I thought he was involved in every play. I thought he was a big positive, and I can't justify taking him out to put Evan Turner in. And not only are you putting Evan Turner in, but you would be putting him in on the wing, where he was effective as a starter last year bringing the ball up. He was mainly your primary ball handler. So I don't see where how you use Evan Turner effectively as a starter.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, his role, because of Marcus Smart's development, because they added a couple guys, I think he's one of the guys whose role will probably change the most. I don't know how that will be. Obviously, they're going to try to maximize the same things they did last year. And he was pretty good last year. He had some moments where he was really good. He helped them win a bunch of games. But yeah, I do think like he's going to be one of the guys who his role needs to change. And it'll be interesting to see how that develops over the year, whether they keep going with whether they go to Jarebko over him, whether they go to somebody like RJ Hunter over him, whether he figures out a way to mesh with Isaiah Thomas on that second unit. So we'll see. I mean, they need playmaking. They need passing. They need guys who can get in the paint. And Evan Turner does all that. He's one of the very few guys on their team who can do that. But he can be frustrating sometimes, and his performance against the Raptors was definitely one of those times. Although he wasn't the only one bad. There were a lot of players who struggled. He was just the one who did it most obviously by missing dunks and taking ill-advised floaters and all that stuff.
He was bad. Okay, so that's established.
Let's move on from Evan Turner.
It's just so easy to just.
Let's move
on.
You're so frustrated.
We're gonna move on.
We have to move on, John.
Fine.
We have to lighten your heart here and move on. And let's talk about another fascinating topic, I think, which is the front court. Five guys played against the Raptors. Five big guys. Nobody of those guys played more than 19 minutes. Stevens went small sometimes, which added more minutes in the front court for Jarebko, Jay Crowder. So it's like, where do they find all the minutes for these guys? Do they take someone out of the rotation at some point? And who's it going to be? Because Jared Sullinger, we thought it was going to be him. He's been good. He was very good against Philadelphia. He had a great first half, I thought, with the exception of his technical foul for rolling the ball against Luis Scola against the Raptors. And, you know, and then the starters, what's going on? Like Tyler Zeller and David Lee, people thought David Lee, or the Celtics hoped David Lee would, his passing would spice up the offense, but it hasn't really panned out like it did in the preseason over the first two games. It's probably not time to panic yet. It's definitely not time to panic yet. It's been two games, but that starting lineup kind of has the same issues it had last year. So I'm very interested to see what Stevens does. I think Amir Johnson is their best big. He only played 19 minutes. He needs more time. Yeah. Do you keep the starters the same?
I right now I keep the starters the same because, you know, you can't, I don't think, break it up because the sample size is too small. You know,
yeah.
you've got a preseason
very
game.
Small.
Right. We gotta dial it back just a little bit because this was the first smack in the face. A good team in the Toronto Raptors, like we said earlier.
But they didn't look good against the Sixers either, remember? Like,
right.
They start off poorly in both halves against the Sixers.
Right, because and there was a size issue there. And so that provides the first bit of evidence that maybe against bigger teams, maybe you change it up. Maybe you don't have David Lee. Maybe those are the days you put Sullinger in and you minimize Lee. Or you put Sullinger in for Zeller or something like that, because he's, of all of the bigs that they have, really Sullinger's the guy who can at least hang with strong bigs. Like, he's got that wide base. He's got the strength. He's not going to get eaten up on the post necessarily. So you're starting to get the information. But I think you keep the starters right now, and you kind of see how it goes. And that unfortunately means that there's some experimentation going on. And we did get a question about that. Do you think Stevens will stick to the big man committee approach, or will we eventually see a steep minutes drop off? This comes from Magnus Nissel. So Magnus has the same question, and I'm not sure what the answer is just yet, other than we're just going to have to wait and see. Eventually, that you're going to see what matchups require which players to play more.
Yeah.
And then you'll see games where Tyler Zeller just doesn't play, or games where Tyler Zeller gets 33 minutes. So I think we're just kind of in this weird, still almost second preseason, because now we get the actual NBA teams and we're getting actual results as opposed to the false positives that I was talking about in the first few shows.
Yeah. I mean, it's tougher to play against Nerlens Noel than it is to play against Robbie Hummel, who was the starting power forward for the first European team they played in preseason when David Lee looked great. One issue I have with Lee starting and playing his fair share of minutes is, where does he fit into this team's future? You know, you can make the argument that he's maybe the best fit for that starting lineup. You can convince me that his passing should help that group a lot. There's a lot you can convince me of there. But when I look at those five big guys, I see three young guys in Sullinger, Zeller, and Olynyk who could be around for a long time. I see Amir Johnson, who is the best big man on the team and a guy who is signed at least through this year, maybe next year too. And then there's Lee. And is he better than those three young guys? Maybe some of them. Is it a noticeable difference? Not really. So when you're giving him minutes, you're giving them to a 32-year-old who probably doesn't fit into the team's future and may not be better than any of the other guys he's competing against for time. So I'm really interested to see how that pans out for the rest of the season. Playing five big guys, I think, is playing too many. To have Amir Johnson lead those big guys with 19 minutes and only get 19 minutes is not good. I think they have to figure that out. And I don't know whether it's like sit some guys certain nights, sit a different guy another night. I don't know what it is, but they need to figure that out. And I don't think playing them all that few minutes. And then Stevens has to sneak some time for those small lineups too, because that was what made them great last year. Or not great. That was what made them good last year in the second half of the season. Like, those were their best lineups. And so obviously they're going to try to replicate that a little bit with Kelly Olynyk. And you can feel small when he's on the court because he does spread the floor.
Yeah.
But like Jay Crowder, Jonas Jerebko, those guys playing at the four gave Boston some of their best moments last year. And so Stevens has to find time for that, like he did in the first game, like he did once they got down in the second game. And to have five big guys on top of that is too many. I just think it's too many. And obviously, if anyone can figure it out, I think Brad Stevens is a good bet to do it. But it's tough. And that, like, that could be a headache really quickly.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Look at everybody who was active played except for Hunter and Rozier, which is not a surprise. I agree with you on Lee. I said it in the preseason on some of the other things that I was doing and it, some of the things that I wrote on the site. Lee is kind of a question mark, and he does do a lot of things, and I think he works in that starting lineup. I think he will work in that starting lineup. Long term, no, I don't think he's part of the long-term solution, which is why when people ask, who do you think is going to be traded, I think David Lee is the prime candidate to be traded because he's on an expiring deal. And if he can do good things for the Celtics this year and show his value, there may be teams out there at the trade deadline looking to add a piece, a solid piece, for their bench, probably. He might be the guy. If Danny Ainge can spin David Lee into a trade for some assets, draft picks or whatever, you know how Danny Ainge does his deals, then I think that's ultimately where we may be heading. Because you're right, you can't play this many guys. You can't. You just can't. Because it's not enough time to get into your flow. You're taking away combinations that work. We've been talking all this time. It's our fourth episode, and we've spent three episodes plus talking about how great Isaiah Thomas and Amir Johnson are together, and Amir Johnson's not even getting 20 minutes a game. So that is important. Amir Johnson goes out there and positive things happen. Good things happen when he's on the floor. He sets good picks. He makes up for other players' defensive mistakes. You know, Jeff Simpson on our site the other yesterday put together this great post. If you're listening to the show, you haven't gone onto RedsArmy.com, go check it out. It's this big, long post with video evidence of all of the good stuff that Amir Johnson, it's from the Philly game, but it's those little things. It's not just his, just him being good. It's him doing those little things like making up for Jared Sullinger wasn't where he was supposed to be. But Amir Johnson slid in and actually made a defensive play and got the ball back for the Celtics. How can you not play that guy? How do you not give him at least 25 minutes out there?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. There's a bunch of guys that are getting these 19, 20 minutes, but you need a few guys to play 30 minutes plus. So eventually you have to pare this down. I'm pretty sure Brad Stevens knows this, but he's kind of stuck right now, and this was the big question about the lineups going into the season, and Bob Ryan had the big piece on it. At some point, guys are going to have to sit, and the guys that sit have a legitimate reason to be in the game and playing. So how do you sit guys who deserve minutes, and how do you just parse that out? So that's going to be the big question. Hopefully, in the next couple of months, we get some of these answers and some guys. I think ultimately there's going to have to be some sort of trade or move or something that's going to have to answer some of these questions.
Yeah, I mean, and then you're going to have injuries at some point too. So some of it's going to just work itself out. Like those five guys aren't all going to stay healthy. I think we saw it in game one when Olynyk had a suspension. Obviously, you miss Olynyk, but also the rotations made more sense. You could sit Tyler Zeller because his matchup wasn't right, and then go small for a bunch of the second half, you know, pull away that way. So I think it made more sense maybe when there were just four guys. But, yeah, that's tough. And I do think, going back to the starting lineup a little bit, I think right now that's a major question mark. You know, last year, that held them back. You know, obviously when Isaiah Thomas is on the court, they're a powerful team. Like they can strike in a hurry. They're just dynamic when he's out there. And when he's not, and when that starting lineup was out there last year, they just gave away points. And normally it was only 5 or 6 minutes at the beginning of each half. But at the end of the day, that matters a lot because most of these games are close. Giving away 4 or 5 points with the starters kills you. And through the first two games, obviously it's just two games, the starting lineup is still launching mid-range jumpers, still not taking enough threes, still not getting to the free throw line very often. So I don't, that's a huge question mark to me right now. And I think the way to getting better, the way to taking that next step to where you're not the seventh seed anymore and you're in the top half of the Eastern Conference is to get more balance, is to become a better team when Isaiah Thomas is not on the court. Because we've seen it since he got to Boston. When he's on the court, they are good. And when he's not, they're not. And they need to get that balance. And they need to learn how to play when he's not on the court. They need to figure something out.
Here are Isaiah Thomas's numbers. Against outrageous. 27 points on 10 of 19 shooting. Just 1 of 6 from 3. But 6 of 7 from the line and 7 assists against Philly. 25 points last night against Toronto on 7 of 16 shooting. 1 of 4 from 3. 10 of 11 from the line. 7 assists. So he's doing this in a very Isaiah Thomas way. He's struggling a little bit from long range. Opening the season 2 of 10 is not ideal, but it's just the first couple of games. But he's taking a ton of free throws. He's efficient. And the thing that gets me about Isaiah, he's 7 assists. And I said last night, you know what? He's going to average a career high, and 7 assists would be a career high if he just kind of kept this pace. That would be a career high because I think his previous career high is like 6.5. Just with Amir Johnson being out there, going back to the point of how Amir needs to play more, Isaiah Thomas and Amir Johnson already have like a chemistry like they've been playing together for years. They just work. And there was a point last night where Olynyk set a pick for Isaiah Thomas, and he popped. And Thomas, I could tell, was looking for Olynyk to roll. And there was space to roll on that play, and Olynyk just instinctively just went out to the three-point line. And I believe Thomas actually scored on the play, so it was okay, it was fine. But it wasn't the same as when Thomas, if Amir Johnson was out there, he would have gotten the pass and he would have had an opportunity to score. So the point being is Thomas and Johnson work well together. We know that combination works well together. And as we've said, they need to be joined at the hip. We still have, actually, we did get a good nickname. I like the nickname from Jeff.
That was good. Himself.
Napoleon Dynamite. I like that. I like that nickname. That might be it. So when they're out there, that's good. And I still don't like starting Thomas because I'm fully invested in him off the bench and being used the way he's used. Because look at the numbers. I don't think these numbers lie. And I think if you start him, you don't get these numbers.
Yeah.
So let's.
Quick question.
Yes.
Question. Would you play him more minutes? Since he's gotten to Boston, he's played about 30 per game, a little less than 30. And it's been the same over the first couple of games this season. Would you boost it to 35? Like, even if he's not as good, even if he's slightly worse but plays 5-6 more minutes, right now they're plus 12 net rating with him on the court and a minus 15.5 when he sits. Like, this is a huge right. difference. And it wasn't that extreme last year, and it won't be that extreme over the full season. But they are a much different team when he's on the court. I struggle with it because you do maximize his minutes, and you, like, he takes a beating. He is a 5'9" guy who absolutely takes, he's like the new age Allen Iverson almost, where like he is hitting guys and going down. And
I saw him slide into the stanchion at least 4 or 5 times last night.
Yeah.
Which, look, I'd love to see him play more minutes. If you say it may affect him, I don't want to affect his ability, what he's doing out on the court. I maybe play him a couple more minutes, like 32, 33. I mean, that I think that's the high end. Once you start getting into 35, you know, you might risk one of those falls being the one that gets him hurt or, you know, bangs him up a little too much for, you know, March and April. That's what I want to avoid. You know, you don't want to bump him up to 35 minutes right now, because come April, that's going to take a lot of a big toll on him. So, I'd like to see him on the floor a little bit more, but not too much, because this is working. I want to see some other things, and I want to incorporate this other question that we got, if I could just call that up, because I think this is part of this discussion. Who compromises the Celtics' best offensive lineup? This comes from Max Green. Who compromises the Celtics' best offensive lineup? And we can work that into starting versus the bench, because any lineup that involves Isaiah Thomas instantly becomes the Celtics' best offensive lineup. But I'm going to twist the question a little bit, because what's the best starting offensive lineup that the Celtics can get out there?
I like that.
Let me before you answer, incorporate another set of Twitter questions, because from Neil and Seth Black, both have the same thing. Seth says, so much for not shooting long twos this year, Avery Bradley. And Neil says, why does Avery shoot so many deep twos? Brad seems to run plays specifically designed for it, a la Patino and Mercer. So this goes into the question, is Avery Bradley part of this offensive, when we start looking at the best offensive starting lineup that we can put out there, is Avery Bradley going to be part of it?
Yeah, I think Avery is part. To me, the issue is they don't have enough guys who can bend the defense. They don't have a guy like Isaiah Thomas in that starting lineup. And I think you and I both agree that to maximize Thomas's minutes, keep him on the bench. He is unbelievable in that role, and he plays unbelievably when he comes off the bench. Keep him there. That's fine.
Right.
But so we're eliminating him from this conversation because we both think he's better on the bench. I think they need more playmaking. I think they need another shooter. Like, the problem with that unit is their two big guys don't have three-point range. The guys on the wing, Crowder, not a great three-point shooter. Bradley is good, smart, has his days. None of those guys are like knockdown three-point shooters. So you don't have shooting. You don't have big guys who can shoot. You don't have a lot of playmaking either. Like, there are so many issues with that unit offensively. To me, they need shooting. And I don't know if I like this because I like Olynyk off the bench with Thomas. But I think if you put Olynyk at four, keep Zeller at five for rim protection, Evan Turner at the three, Crowder goes back with Thomas, where they're awesome together. I think Crowder will play a lot of minutes regardless. So Turner's in there for playmaking. Smart, Bradley, Olynyk, and Zeller. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Smart, Bradley, Olynyk, Turner, and Zeller. Well, okay. This is the dead air portion of the show, because something about that doesn't feel right to me.
And
it's probably because it's Evan Turner.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, you just spent 10 minutes railing about his entire life. So.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's talk this through. You start Marcus Smart. He's bringing the ball up. You've got Avery Bradley as your other one on one side, and Evan Turner. So basically, Evan Turner is playing the three, but he's a ball handling three. So
yeah, he just gives you that extra playmaking.
So Bradley's just kind of off on the side. Okay.
Plus, another layer of that is then you split up Turner and Thomas so that when Turner is on the court, he does what he does best, which is handle the ball, and which is what he did well last year. And So I think he's a better fit there. Does it stunt Marcus Smart? Not really. He's not doing a lot of playmaking right now anyway. Like, they're not just out there running spread pick and rolls with him. So I'd be okay with that unit. I don't know. Who would you – obviously, you probably wouldn't have Turner in there. Who would be your five?
I'm questioning – the obvious place to look is the front court, because you wonder if I'm starting to wonder if Jared Sullinger should be in the starting lineup.
I was thinking the same thing, like almost flip-flop, like what Lee and Sullinger were expected to be, the roles they were expected to be throughout the preseason. Like, Sullinger starts, Lee gets like spare minutes, and then Zeller plays when the matchups are right.
But the problem then becomes you, David Lee just immediately after all of this preseason talk about how much his playmaking really helps, and he's done some good things.
Yeah.
But we immediately start saying, well, all right, after two games, forget it.
Well, that's the thing.
Everything that we've been saying, we loved this starting lineup. We loved it last week. We were ready to go last week. We thought it was good. We thought we spent all of this time talking about how great defensively that front three would be, and then the two bigs would work to, you know, we needed Lee's playmaking to kind of help facilitate that offense. Okay, so let's look at this realistically. Against Philly, they were big, and Lee is a terrible defender, and they have two of the better young bigs out there. And Tyler Zeller got worked by a guy who's going to be a Rookie of the Year candidate and potentially, you know, a pretty good player over the course of his career. So Okafor is a really good offensive player. No doubt about that. So that was that. And then last night happened. And what was the problem last night? Last night's problem wasn't necessarily the offense, was it? I mean,
third quarter, it was really bad.
But they gave up 113 points. The third quarter was really bad,
but
the Celtics still scored 103 points.
But they scored 103 points while shooting 36.7%. Like, that was not a good offensive. That was a bad offensive performance, and their point total was boosted because the refs were whistle happy, and
the pace
was really fast. So, like, to say that was even a mediocre offensive performance would be, I think, misleading.
Right. So I'm going to stick with this starting lineup, but I think Sullinger needs to be considered to be moved into the starting lineup. At least in some games. And maybe it's Zeller. Maybe it's Zeller that doesn't get the minutes some night, but I think you oh man, I think you get Sullinger in there a little bit, and maybe, I don't know, because the best offensive rotation, best offensive lineup includes Isaiah Thomas, and because he's not a starter, that really makes things difficult, because everybody knows that you keep Isaiah Thomas in this role, it works. He's finishing games, he's playing different minutes. But that starting lineup, you need somebody like Isaiah Thomas. But I think if you put him in there, his performance suffers. So how do you even just hold down the fort? Is it, do you put Bradley? Do you maybe you just put Evan Turner in for Bradley?
But then you have even less shooting in the starting lineup. And I think the fact that we can even discuss like Sullinger or Lee, and it's a valid argument either way, like the fact that you can discuss between your fifth big man and a guy who is starting is crazy. Like, there's no team in the league where you could discuss two options like that and it can be legitimate. Like, one guy could either be starting or, you know, should be out of the rotation, and like, it's just so indicative of the evenness there. And like, that, those five guys is brutal to pick who plays. And Stevens was going to have to juggle stuff based on lineups, and I don't know.
What if you start small? What if you start small? You start Smart, Bradley, Turner, Crowder, and then Zeller.
I see. I would like that. I would like to see more small lineups, but then like that issue with the five bigs becomes an issue with six or seven bigs, and then it's like, how do you find minutes for all those guys?
Right.
And frankly, like, guys are going to have to sit. No matter what, guys are going to have to sit, and you have to do what's best for the team. But that being said, like, there is a human side to this, and if you go small that often, and you go small in the starting lineup, so that means you're going small 5 minutes each half every game, at least, then it pushes down the minutes even possible for those five big guys to play. So, I mean, Stevens' job, because some of those best options are the small ball lineups, so tough. And I'm really interested to see how he continues to find minutes for those groups, because they were so good last year. And I keep harping on this, but that was what made them good last year, and that was their differentiator. And now, can you replicate it without going small? Can you sneak enough minutes to still go small? That's the biggest question for me right now regarding this team.
Yeah. Look, like you said, people are going to have to sit. At some point, we're going to have to eliminate guys from this rotation because it's too many. And it's amazing how we've made this hairpin turn, but I think the reality smacked us in the face last night. The depth is great because I could sit here and make a case for starting Jonas Jerebko. Why not start a guy? If you're talking about shooting, you want to go small, you can start Jerebko, or at least a lineup where maybe Jerebko plays more off the bench. You can make a case that when he's out there, good things are happening. So why not? But at some point, you can't play. What did they play? 11 guys last night?
11 guys. Well, Jerebko didn't play in the first half, so it was 10 in the first half, which is where Stevens wants to be. I think the bigger issue is that five of those guys were splitting the two front court spots. Right. So it was like you had five guys for three and then five guys for two. So one place was pinched, and then the other place had Evan Turner playing 27 minutes, much to your chagrin.
Right. So if you start, let's just say, we'll work with the hypothesis that Evan Turner should be starting, because if he's not starting, then he's horrible. And
we don't have to say he's horrible yet. Like, he had one bad game. I thought he was good on opening night. Like, let's not say he's necessarily horrible in that role.
I think last year and this year have shown a simple thing. Like, you start Evan Turner or you don't play him at all. And that's not just for the two games. Last year when he started, he did okay. But if you bring him off the bench and you put him as a wing off the bench, then I think he ends up being terrible. And that's just it. He needs to bring the ball up or be one of the primary ball handlers in the starting rotation, and that's how he's most effective. And I just think the drop off in his play otherwise is just too much. So if we just work with that and we say, what if we started small? What if? So we go out there and we throw Smart, Bradley, Turner, Crowder, and we'll just say Zeller for now, because we need a tall guy out there, and he kind of works well. Then you have to bring in Isaiah Thomas. You definitely have to bring in Amir Johnson, and you definitely have to bring in, I think, Kelly Olynyk. And that leaves who? You got to play Sullinger. So if you sit, so Isaiah Thomas checks in for Avery Bradley, and then Johnson checks in, and you know you need to have. I hate this. Too many guys.
There's just so many guys, and they all deserve minutes.
Yes. So it's Isaiah Thomas, Amir Johnson, Kelly Olynyk. They come in together. Playing with who? Playing with who else on the floor? It could be Sullinger.
Yeah, I think it just depends on the night. I think that the key to this is you have to find ways to utilize the depth. And we saw it against Philly. Like, the depth was fantastic. Like, Sullinger came in off the bench when they needed him, sparked a run. You know, Jarebko comes in the second half. You use him to throw double teams. Like, everybody had a role. Everybody played the role. You win by 17. Next night, it was like the depth almost got in the way. The next game against the Raptors, depth almost got in the way. It's like, nah, you know what? I don't think you should be giving minutes to all those big guys, because then you have Amir Johnson playing 19 minutes. And then you have limited time for the small lineups. So it's like there's a balance there, and it's delicate, delicate balance, because there's so many factors that go into it, and it's going to be different every night. And it's on Stevens to make it work. The organization has a lot of trust that he can, but it's like so many tough decisions every night. And like, that's, you can either depth can either help you, hurt you, somewhere in between. Depth is like the biggest riddle on this team right now, because there's like, where's that line where there's too much, and where does it help? And how do you utilize it perfectly? And it's going to change all the time.
Yes. Okay. So let's just accept this possibility that we're overreacting. That one game, and not even just one game, one half, because the first half wasn't so bad last night. The first half against Toronto wasn't so bad. The second half is where things fell apart. Because they played Toronto pretty well. They went into the halftime tied at 54. They had some lapses, but man, they had some really nice plays in that first half. They were moving the ball well. There was a sequence where I forget who it was, Thomas, Lee, and Zeller. They had a play on
that,
the left side.
That pass was beautiful with the pick and roll to Zeller and then, or to Lee, and then the
Zeller dove.
Zeller on the dive. Yeah, that was beautiful. Beautiful
basket. That was a beautiful play that involved two of the guys that we're talking about not playing anymore. So it's entirely possible that we're overreacting because we have an emotional reaction to one game against the first good team that they've seen so far, that of the things that they were trying against bad teams just didn't work against a good team.
But I don't think it's overreacting, because I think this is the issue we all foresaw going into the season, would be that depth could be sometimes an issue. And Stevens has to harness it. And
yes,
and that's the thing. And I think that there's a lot of reason to believe that he will, and a lot of reason to believe that if you have 11, 12 capable guys, Stevens is the one you want figuring out how to give out the minutes. But at the same time, like, I think that was the issue we foresaw, and seeing it in action with Kelly Olynyk back against the Raptors, who admittedly are a good team and admittedly can make you look bad on some nights, especially when Terrence Ross is going bonkers. Like that was kind of to be expected, was that sometimes it's going to be a problem. And so I don't think it's overreacting when the issue that you thought was going to happen happened. And now it's just, how do you use that? So I don't think it's always going to be an issue. And when their whole team plays better, if they had just played better, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. If Amir Johnson had played 19 minutes and they'd won by 20, we'd be talking about, oh, his legs are rested. Sullinger had a great game. David Lee looked good in the first unit. Man, like, they have so many good options. And that's true. And there will be nights when it all works out. But there will also be nights when it's tricky. And that's the issue. So we'll see. We'll see there. That's all going to be very interesting. That front court, as I said, I'm absolutely fascinated by it and how Stevens decides to do this every night, because it's going to be different. And it's like a maze, navigating through a maze every night.
Right. And not only that, like, you've got now – go ahead.
No, no, you got it. The floor is yours, John.
I was just going to say, because now all of a sudden we're talking about the maze, the front court. Look at the front court that's coming into Boston on Sunday.
Yep.
I mean, you got who guards LaMarcus Aldridge? Who guards Tim Duncan? Who guards David West?
Good luck, guys.
That's, I mean,
Amir Johnson, wow. Guard them all. Just have Amir guard them all.
So, okay, so let's transition here, because this kind of leads into one of the Twitter questions. It comes from Mike McCullough. With injuries bound to happen and some rosters already depleted, like the New Orleans Pelicans, how long until Danny trades some of the C's depth? We've got a lot of players, and we just talked about it, and I even brought it up. At some point, guys aren't going to have to not play, and how long until we know that Danny Ainge, you know, doesn't mind making the in-season trade? Would there be a sooner rather than later trade that could address some of these issues?
I mean, it's possible. It's definitely possible. Like, when you think about last year, there was a span last year when the Celtics had Brandon Wright, like really quick span before he got traded away, where they had five guys. Brandon Bass was grumbling about playing time. Wright didn't play much at all. Like, that was an ugly spell for the Celtics. And part of it, I think, was because they had too many options. And Ainge saw that, and he thinned out the roster, like, immediately. He moved Wright immediately, and then it made more sense. Will he do that again? I don't know. As I said, like, injuries are going to happen. It's nice to have depth. A lot of these guys are young and may fit into the future. And you're not going to trade a Sullinger unless you get something of value back. Is there value out there for him? Enough value to make you give him up? I don't know. Like, he's a near double-double guy. Right now, I think would probably be selling low on him because he still has the weight issues. But he's due for a bigger contract. So, I mean, yes, I think Ainge would be open to a move to consolidate the roster and trade two for one. But what's out there? I mean, that's the issue. And you're not going to just make moves to make moves, because you're not at the stage where you're going to sacrifice the future to get a few extra wins this season.
Right.
That's definitely not where you are. So, I mean,
and like you said earlier, Lee is he's done after this year potentially, and there's no guarantee that Amir Johnson's even coming back after this year if they, you know, he's in a non-guaranteed deal. So, maybe they just deal with it for a significant portion of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible they deal with it. I also think at some point you're going to want the rookies to play some minutes. Because
Yes. Because
those guys had promising preseasons, and none of them have played a meaningful minute through two games. So at some point, and everybody always gets opportunities because of injuries, sicknesses, everything else. But I do think at some point you're going to want to get a look at Terry Rozier, see what he's got in a real situation. You're going to want to take a look at RJ Hunter, see what type of minutes he can give you on the perimeter, because you need a shooting. You need shooting. And see what Jordan Mickey can give you. Obviously, you know, we've already talked at length about the five capable big men in front of him.
406 went in there.
Yeah. So, but I do think, you know, those guys, you need to sneak them some time at some point.
Of course.
And it'll happen at some point. But that's another thing to me. Like, you would like to see those guys get a little bit of seasoning, if possible, and the depth limits that. And Stevens has always said, you've got to earn your minutes. You earn them in practice, you develop in practice, and then the games are for the best players and the guys who fit what we need to do. So that's okay. Like, those guys will still develop. They have a great process of improving players, I think. And everybody has a one-on-one coach that they go to for drills. Quick aside, the other day after practice, I had to ask Brad if they were the players were doing mandatory work because so many of them were on the court getting extra work after practice. It was like the whole team was out there just going through extra drills after they had just gone through a practice in the regular season after playing their first game with another game the next day. And Brad was like, no, actually, that's just them doing what they want to do. I mean, it was unbelievable. Like, everybody was out there. The only ones who weren't, I believe, were Olynyk, who was about to talk to media, Johnson, same thing, and then Sullinger, who was upstairs on the Stairmaster, getting his work in a different way. So, and it was like everybody, literally everyone was out there. I mean, it was unbelievable to see that, and you never see that. Like, there's always a few guys shooting after practice. But this team is committed, and that's neat to see. One more aside before we go. The Raptors love Amir Johnson. Like, I cannot overstate how much those guys love Amir Johnson as a person. Not just a basketball player, but as a person. Like, he seems like the nicest man. They could not say enough nice things about him, even though he left them in free agency. So they said some powerful comments about that guy. DeMar DeRozan said, he's the type of guy, if you're having the worst day of your life, if he gives you a phone call or stops by your apartment, you instantly get better. And that is the type of guy you want in your locker room. So the Amir love just keeps going. He's going to help the Celtics a lot. He needs more minutes, though. Give him more minutes.
Give him more minutes. last couple of questions here, just because these will be quick answers. Will RJ Hunter be part of the rotation as early as next week? It's from Donald Tower. Next week, I don't think so, but I think he'll get minutes. And I'll throw in my own thing. You know, there are people who are listening when I bring up Avery Bradley, should he be starting or not? There are people listening who think that Rozier can easily slide into Avery Bradley's role, and you can easily like just slide Avery Bradley out of the mix and not even give him any minutes at all, because Rozier will eventually become the defender who's a much better shooter, and that Rozier would ascend into that nice piece next to Marcus Smart, which is, you know, a fantasy. But I know people are going to say that.
If you're listening to the podcast and not watching the videos here, you are missing my face, which is one of exasperation. Because Terry Rozier is not ready to give what Avery Bradley does. He is not ready to give what anybody in that rotation does. He struggled defensively in the preseason. Like, he had some steals, he had some moments, but he wasn't he had a lot of mistakes defensively, I thought. Some awareness issues. He needs seasoning. But he is a freak athlete, though. And I do think he is going to develop into a good player, at least from what everybody says. He works his butt off, and he is top of the line athlete. So his time will come. I don't know how soon it will be. Hunter's time will come. I don't know how soon it will be. They've obviously both passed James Young in the rotation, because Young has been inactive both games. He is the 15th man on the roster. He is the last man on the roster right now. And he's been passed already by all three rookies.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating. But, you know, he's the youngest guy on the team. We keep saying it. He's the youngest guy on the team. And he's got a lot to learn. So, and it's only his second year. So, okay, one more question here. Do we see DeMar DeRozan as a realistic trade option?
No.
Realistic option versus via trade or free agency. It's from Rashad Cole. The answer is no.
No. And the answer is no, not just because he probably wouldn't come to Boston. I don't think he's very good. Like, he is a good athlete. He can score at times. He takes a lot of bad shots. He doesn't necessarily.
He's a little overrated.
Yeah, I think he's one of the more overrated guys. The fact that he was an all-star bugs me.
Yeah.
because I really don't – I'm not sure he's very good. He's okay. He's good. But the type of money he's going to command is
– He's like
– No.
To me, he's the next Rudy Gay.
Yeah, like he can do a lot of things that make you believe he's better at basketball than he is. He's not the type of guy who really impacts winning like the real stars do. And yeah, I've never been a big DeMar DeRozan guy. I respect everybody says he works hard. He does seem to add layers to his game. You know, I guess there's a chance he continues to improve and gets better. I've never been a huge fan of his. The Celtics, I don't think he's the type of guy who fits into what they want to do, which is shoot threes and move the ball and defend like heck. And that's not DeMar DeRozan. And so, no, DeMar DeRozan, scratch him off the list.
No.
Goodbye.
Jay King says
move on
no.
To somebody else.
The most important question we've gotten.
Not.
Jay King says no to DeMar DeRozan. The most important question we got over Twitter comes from the Globe's Adam Himmelsbach, who asks, how would you rank Celtics podcasts? And also, why are so many media members wearing suit jackets to games this year? I might be partial, but I think this is the number one podcast out there.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then everyone else is tied for second.
No, this is the top five is Rain and Jays. We're like Dylon from Making the Band, and that's all there is to it.
We're gonna leave it there.
Yeah.
Explain why so many media members are dressing so well this year.
That's a good question. I personally was a slob last season. I was a lot of the time I would wear hoodies and everybody else was wearing like suits or ties. Like I am not a good dresser. and especially when I'm tired
of
a long season. You know, I own a few. I own like four, I believe.
Oh, whoa.
So a ton of ties. I've started to wear them this year, but Gary Washburn, I mean, he set the tone early in preseason. He started wearing suits to every preseason game, just bringing it every night. And so once Gary sets that tone, you got to fall in line. You cannot go a different way. You know, I'm coming with the ties because Gary convinced me that dressing well was something I needed to do. So thank you for that, Gary. I appreciate all the improvement that you've inspired within me. And I'll probably be back in sweats by next week. But for now, I'm looking decent when I show up to games.
It seems like a very cagey relationship with the rookie. You know, all of a sudden it's like, no, this is how you carry yourself. This is how you be a professional.
Yeah. All right. You just leader by example, that Gary Washburn.
All right. We're going to wrap things up here, but before we wrap it up, I do want to mention, my dismay at what happened at ESPN by shutting down Grantland. I thought that was just, for lack of a better term, I'm just going to say it's a shame that a collection of writing talent like that has to be disbanded. I'm not worried about any of those guys. I think every single one of those writers has proven that they will all go on to bigger and better things, hopefully more stable environments. But I suppose in our own selfish way, to have them all have been collected into one spot was just kind of a nice treat to be able to go to one place and get so much good stuff. And I know we have our own connection, our Celtics connection with Zach Lowe, you know, who used to be Celtics Hub And, you know, I have a sense of personal pride seeing a fellow Celtics blogger become what he's become, you know, and to see, you know, you do what you do, to see bloggers go on to bigger and better things. It's I personally enjoy that because it feels like you see members of the fraternity of sorts go off and go do great things. I know Zach, who's probably emerging as one of the best NBA writers in the business at this point. I know he's going to be fine, but I just wanted to say that it really sucks what happened there. It really sucks what's happening at ESPN, and I just want to share my sympathy or empathy for the writers who now are in flux and have contracts. They don't know how they're going to be honored, and they don't know where their next gig is going to be. So I just wanted to say that. I don't know, Jay, if you have anything to add or.
Yeah, I mean, everything you said, Zach, for my money, is the best basketball writer alive. And he'll be fine. Everybody will be fine, as you said. It's just scary. Like, how do you have that amount of talent and that big a brand name and decide that you cannot keep it around because your operation is failing? Like, no, ESPN, you failed because you had all this talent. That was ESPN's, the very best thing they did to me was Grantland. And that was, I went to Grantland over ESPN.com every day. And those guys were as good as it gets. And to ESPN failed those guys by not making it work. They failed those guys by not being able to have a civil relationship with Bill Simmons, who was the guy who put it all together. And they failed those guys by not giving them notice. From what it seems like, they didn't know about this until right about the same time as the announcement came out.
Found out on Twitter.
How do you not give them notice when you are damaging their lives, and to have everybody else find out about it at the same time, to see some of the reactions on Twitter? Like, Zach Lowe never loses his cool, and he seemed like he was freaking out a little bit on Twitter. Like, it, just so sad to see that. Deal with your employees better, ESPN. Learn how to keep a good thing going. Learn how to maximize all the talent that you have. And instead of first freaking take, put some money into Grant. Like, don't pay John Gruden $6 million per year or whatever it is. Like, there are so many things. Don't have Ray Lewis, whatever the heck he's making out there. Don't have Trent Dilfer. Like, that those guys deserve to lose their jobs, but they make so much money, and then you can't keep Grantland alive. It's sad.
Right.
It's really sad. It's a sad state of affairs in journalism, and I think it's scary for the entire industry when something that great cannot be kept afloat.
Yeah, that's I think the biggest lesson. And I've been working in the media for, geez, almost 20 years now. And you see it. And somebody had a tweet yesterday. I think it's since been deleted, but it's absolutely spot on. You work in this business long enough, you're going to get screwed by the suits. At some point, it's just going to happen. No one makes it through a media career unscathed. Somewhere, somehow, somebody. It's such a relationship to sports. It's so similar, where if you had a clash of personalities, you could be gone. And it's not that you're good. Think of this as the Bulls oh my God, why am I drawing a blank on his name? The coach that just got fired from the Bulls.
Tom Thibodeau.
Thanks. Oh my God, I just had a brain fart.
Yes.
The Bulls and Thibs were basically ESPN and Simmons. And they're both complicit in many ways. They both could have done things to make things work. And ultimately, it became a big mess, and a lot of people suffered from it. The difference here is ESPN employs multimillionaires, like you were saying. And these guys who write for Grantland, they make decent money, but it's like real person decent money. You know, like I don't know specifically what their contracts are, but it's, you know, they're making okay money. They're comfortable. But if something goes wrong and they lose their job and they lose that money, they're screwed. Like, they're the people that they got to go like on unemployment if they don't have a job, or they have to go find freelance gigs because they're not sitting on a huge bank account. You could fire Ray Lewis tomorrow. He's fine. He doesn't have to work. But these guys, you fire them, if they don't get a gig, then they're screwed. They got to go piece a living together. So that's the big problem. I don't want to harp on this. We've gone pretty long. It's my fault. I'm not getting a job at ESPN. So let's wrap things up. We'll post this before the Spurs, so we'll see how things work out with the Celtics and the Spurs and further schedule along. That front court is going to be a real interesting thing, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it and a lot more next week on the Rain and Jays podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody.